Greetings, this is Eric Andelin, Senior Photogrammetry Workflow Specialist with SimActive, and you're listening to episode number 14, How to Meet Photogrammetric Accuracy Standards of the Pixels and Points podcast. And with me today, I have Bill Johnson, Certified Photogrammetrist with DAS Geospatial. Bill, say hi to everyone.
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Great. Bill and I have a background, prior to my being with SimActive, I spent time in the Dallas area, and we've worked together with previous companies and so forth. Bill, tell us about your role with DAS, your background in photogrammetry.
Okay. I'm the vice president here at DAS. I've been here full-time since 1985. Part-time started in 79. It's the only job I've ever had.
Wow.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but that is the thing. And I'm kind of the managing supervisor, if you will. I'm over the project management, the production management. I dip my toe into the projects here and there as needed, just kind of overall scope over everything production related. Or photogrammetry and LiDAR related.
Mm-hmm. So, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys own your own aircraft?
We have a helicopter.
Yeah.
With a pod medium format camera and LiDAR sensor on that. And of course, several UAVs, and then we partner with folks with fixed wing to do projects over literally all over the country.
So. Right. And you mentioned UAVs. You guys got into UAVs when?
Probably the day after they said we could. there was the time to you people said, when are they going to allow us to use UAVs? And I'm like, oh, they're never going to let us use UAVs. And so when that came up, we started scrambling and said, we got to dive into this.
Sure.
And so we did.
Sure. Yeah. And to take it a step further back than that, you mentioned that you have a pod system on a helicopter. It has both a medium format and LiDAR. So the medium format camera is?
It's a phase one.
Great.
Mm-hmm. You're going to ask me which letters and numbers, and I get them. IXU, ABC, one. Yeah. And then the same with it's a Regal. LiDAR scanner, same thing, the numbers, letters.
Yeah.
Yep. Elude me.
Yeah. I completely understand. I am probably less than an hour away from the Regal headquarters, so I see them quite a bit. And also...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And also the Phase 1 systems, they're very popular these days. So
yeah.
a lot of our customers use the Phase 1s. You're a certified photogrammetrist, so am I. My renewal is up, and I've sent in everything. I think you might even have gotten one of the
I did. So be nice to me. I hadn't filled it out yet, Eric. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a test now. But in the space that we're in, including with our customers here, from SimActive. We not only have, the large format mapping companies using our software, which typically do have photogrammetrists involved in the process. We have satellite companies and more so also UAS. And UAS companies, they may be a little bit newer. They may be tend to either be operated as a branch or a subset of a survey company. Maybe their knowledge of photogrammetry isn't as robust or as strong as those of us, like you said, who have been working for the same company for the past 30 years.
Forever.
Yeah, we do have a bank of knowledge. And it's nice to share that with people, especially when they're open in their receiving of what we do as photogrammetrists. So, to that end, talk a little bit about, you know, how you got involved in ASPS. You've got a CP and you've got a CMS. So if you could kind of explain the difference to folks.
As far as the CP and the CMS, it's when some of the projects, especially in the governmental side, we're starting to have a requirement for that over the photogrammetric projects for a CP. And so I decided to go after that, take the exam, what have you, and got that. Not long after that, it was probably within a year, we started seeing the same requirement for LIDAR. And so I figured it was just logical to go ahead and just go after that, sit through the exam there, and got the CMS LIDAR. And like I said, primarily just to have those certifications to fulfill that requirement for projects.
Yep. I know, obviously, when we do a lot of work with the DOTs and the government, you know, there are requirements in their contracts that are based on ASPRS standards. That's just the way it works here in the States. Knowing that, you know, this webinar obviously goes out to an international crowd. Every or most countries have their own standards. They're very similar in most cases, but you know, how the roles of a photogrammetrist play within the structure of a mapping company with, you know, regulations and so forth may be different. Here in the States, depending on what state you're in, you're required to have a surveyor to sign off on mapping projects. Some states not necessarily so, but we have to keep that in mind. So what we do as photogrammetrists we provide that additional guidance to the surveyors to help them on the aerial mapping side of things. So just to let the audience know. I'm going to go over the topics real quick. You know, what is an accuracy standard? How a well-accepted accuracy standard such as ASPRS is defined? How does new technology affect accuracy standards? And then how are map products validated against a standard? We'll talk a little bit, you know, right here on what is an accuracy standard. So accuracy standards are basically a set of criteria that define the required level of accuracy for a particular product. You know, this doesn't apply to just mapping, it applies to anything, but it's used to ensure that the results produced, you know, by a system or a process are consistent and reliable and meet required accuracy levels. And then typically they're defined in terms of a numerical value or percentages or some type of statistic that shows that you meet a acceptable level of, you know, error deviation from a desired result. So the key points in there to me really is consistent and reliable, because we're doing projects that could be 40 acres, it could be 800 square miles, it could be an entire state, it could be a corridor. What are your thoughts on consistent and reliable?
Yeah, well, as you said, we want to have this meet the same accuracy standard. We live being GIS in more of a design level world, that's primarily what is design level accuracy. Mm-hmm. And so we know if an engineer is going to take what we do and do some preliminary design, it has to meet a very specific accuracy that he can trust if he's going to start doing, you know, dirt quantities and so forth. We have to be within an accuracy that he can trust and verify, because moving dirt is expensive. And so whether it is, like you say, 40 acres, 400, 4,000 acres or more, we have to be able to reliably hand off that final product to an engineer and tell him these products meet the accuracy standard that will allow you to go do your design level. So yeah, consistency in the accuracy, it's just paramount. Regardless of the size of the project, is where those guys are trusting us to hand them something that meets that specific criteria.
Yeah. And, you know, again, in the first point, accuracy standards are a set of criteria that define a required level of accuracy for a particular product. Accuracy standards change based on what the end user is expecting. And yeah. I don't know if you see it, but a lot of times I see people touting accuracies or resolutions that are extreme and most likely are not necessary to meet the accuracy standards that the end user wants.
Yeah, we see that all the time. I mean, we go really the polar opposites. You've got some where they're spouting accuracies that either aren't reality, or you got the other end of the spectrum. There's still a whole bunch of folks out there that I'm talking about, clients, engineers, surveyors, that don't necessarily know what the accuracies are these days. They're still spouting things that we were saying 20 years ago, you know, plus or minus half the contour interval.
Yep.
Well, 20 years ago, yeah, it was probably the thing. Now we're getting into the tenths of a foot. And that side of the equation, they don't even know that. So we've got to be, here again, use the word consistent on letting those folks know we're a lot more accurate than that. But on the flip side, we can't go overboard and tell them, yeah, this is perfect. This is all within a tenth, you know, that kind of thing. We got to let them know what things really are.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. There's, at least here, there's still a lot of language out there in contracts with customers that, you know, maybe date back 10, 15, 20 years. We can well exceed those with the technology we have, but again, it may not be necessary for what they're trying to do. Sometimes we overload our customers with data that they don't necessarily need.
Yeah, true.
It bogs them
very
down.
True.
You know, if you hand them a mobile LiDAR-based point cloud, you know, maybe they just wanted a Surface and they can't even read it.
Right.
So.
And that's something to that end, Eric. That's something we typically ask if they want the full mobile LiDAR or heck, even the full aerial LiDAR point cloud. We will usually ask them like, hey, you kind of know how big that's going to be? Is your system set up to do it? Because we filter it down, we can provide model key points, we can do different things surface just to verify, because there's lots of times they'll get the full point cloud and you hear from a week later and it's like our computer's choking on it kind of thing. So we try to talk to them up front and just verify we're all on the same page and understanding what they want and really want to do with it, because that's the big thing. A lot of them say, yeah, I want the full point cloud, but they really don't want the full point cloud. Yeah. So you just got to make sure that.
Let's move on to, you know, how is a well-accepted accuracy standard such as ASPRS defined? And the reason I bring this up is because every once in a while, these standards get updated. And right now, we're going through a process within the ASPRS where update is being considered. And it's being considered because the technology that we have access to, the quality of the cameras, the altitudes that things are being flown, the introduction of LiDAR, all those things have changed the way we look at the accuracy standards, because honestly, we can exceed the standards from, you know, the previous release while they're reviewing it. So it's really hard to, in a conversation, you know, show what changes there are in those standards. And Bill, I don't know if you've had a really good chance to review those. I've talked to a couple of folks, I've made my comments, but it looks like some of the statistical requirements in those accuracy standards may be duplicitous. So they're going to remove, you know, one or more of those, change them a little bit. There's a conversation within the new standards about checkpoints and control. Again, based on how we do AT, how we use our survey, those standards can be either loosened or tightened, depending on the size of the project. Ultimately, it comes down to, again, what the end user wants and, you know, how that's dictated. Is it dictated by the survey that this whole thing is based off of? Those are the things that we need to consider. What are your thoughts on, you know, how these standards are defined?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, it's not quite as cut and dry as it has been in the past, because you're talking about, you know, a large format camera versus a UAV camera, two very different things. You're talking about LiDAR systems that are very high accuracy, not a lot of noise, versus you've got some lower end that do have a lot of noise, and those aren't necessarily creating the same accuracies, but yet sometimes you get that some folks are thinking, well, it's LiDAR, so it must be this accuracy. Mm-hmm. But there's that huge disparity. And so to pare that down, you'll be at like ASPRS, I think they need to set the standard, but then we've got to be diligent in saying, okay, we can achieve that with this system, with this sensor, and maybe be open and honest about not being able to achieve it with this system. And so you mentioned something about the survey. You know, we still tell folks, we're still dependent upon the survey control that we receive. We can tell you what accuracy we can get that are relative accuracy, but if you want good absolute accuracy, we've got to have very good survey control, and we can run accuracy points against that, be it a lot of 0.5, be it a 10, to show what the accuracies of the deliverables are relative to that, where sometimes it, I think for the most part, we get like the initial ground control, panel control, you know, that'll be either level loops or very two or three separate sessions with GPS that are, you know, a minimum of 3 minutes each. And those are good control points. A lot of times what we see is we'll get check shots, maybe some cross section or something like that, and those don't seem to fit as well. You're like, well, what's the difference? And well, they just did the 7 second topo shot. I'm like, well, you know, time out. You know, that's, you know, that's not the same thing. Yeah. It's not the same standard. So you can't, you know, check the our LiDAR or our finish 10 to that relative to what the initial control is. It's all going to be the same, if you will. One of the difficulties, I think, in redefining the accuracy standards is somewhere in that mix.
Yeah. And again, a lot of states were reliant on the surveyors who may not be within our organization. And you're right.
Most aren't.
If they go out and run a level loop around a project, then it's really tight. Even if, like you say, they do multiple sessions with GPS, they can get it really tight. But then if they go out and do the check shots and they're just, you know, bing, bing, bing from point to point to point, you know, it may not even be, you know, they may, depending on the project, they may not even be considering whether this is a vertical check shot or a horizontal vertical check shot where you need to be somewhere where you can identify that feature. Those create challenges unto themselves on how we define accuracy as far as it goes to our customer. It is a layer cake in that first you start off with the error in the control, then you start off with the error in the solution from your airborne GPS or your AT. And then you also got to consider that you've got, you know, you went from, you know, a photogrammetric solution or a LiDAR point cloud to a decimated 10. And, you know, you've opened that up to little amounts of error that have to be considered when you roll all that up to meet your customer's needs. This is an open-ended conversation, and we'll close the loop as we get towards the end of it. But let's talk about the technology. How does new technology affect accuracy standards? So again, you're now using a medium format camera and a LiDAR system. Are you capturing in parallel? Are you capturing separately? You're flying lower. So let's talk a little bit about what technology has done to, you know, our business.
The technology, especially the LiDAR, has been a game changer for us. You know, when we first used it back, I don't know, early 2000s, we did a LiDAR project and came back and it was 6 feet off all over. And I'm like, man, this LiDAR stuff, it's never going to work. You know, fortunately that was wrong because now we're getting a LiDAR and we're, you know, on hard surfaces, man, we're, you know, lots of times we're flat, 1/10, stuff like that. I'm not going to, you know, say it's all going to be that way, but that's the results we're seeing. And to me, that's that's a huge game changer for us. That puts us at another level of accuracy we weren't able to achieve before. And that's what's been fun about it, is being able to see just, you know, how far can we push that envelope to get the, what's next? What's the next better, more accurate system, sensor, you know, to give our clients just a little more.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not wrong to discuss the way this originally started. And, you know, we talk about back in the day, you know, it was a calibrated aerial mapping camera that had to go in every 3 years and get recalibrated. You had to meet a certain resolution. And by resolution, we mean how many silver halides are in that frame. You know, the resolution of cameras now far exceeds what we had before. And the consistency of it, because we're now not using negatives and diapositives that have stretch in them. We're using, you know, a solid state CMOS or whatever that is giving us accurate, you know, coordinates. So that's one thing we have to consider. Another is how we do it. So again, you talk about the old method where these were mechanical machines. I mean, they were reconstructing the position of the aircraft as it was taking exposures, and then, you know, doing an AT to find that on the ground, where we were literally looking through stereo optics to do that. Then the next step was digital, which is I started in the mechanical world and came into the digital world with those, where we, you know, we were now putting in plates in a machine that, you know, was much more like a tabletop, and you know, it sped things up a bit. You were doing CAD drawing versus, you know, hand drawing, you know, on large sheets of Mylar.
Praise God.
Yeah. You know, you and I are both thankful that that's over with. And like you said, that brought on some really cool technology for us that, you know, we could geek out on. Then the next step was digital workstations, where, you know, now all of a sudden, whether it's a film camera, well, it is a film camera still, they're being scanned. And those scanned images, now that we have good computing power, allow us to, you know, do stereo again. This time, instead of, you know, big oculars, we're using glasses that are flickering at the same rate as the camera, as the monitor, and showing us stereo. So you can, you know, collect in stereo that way. Then the next step is LiDAR, image-based point clouds, which are the same thing as LiDAR to a degree. But it takes the whole thing into a digital world. Now you just have, you know, like what we do in SimActive is we create surfaces and mosaics. And from those, you can create products, you know, that meet those type of accuracy standards. So, you know, that's the line, or the path that we have taken. And then again, new cameras are way better as far as resolution than the old large format cameras that we used to use. We have cameras now with multiple sensors in there. And we've got combination systems, like you said, that are also running LiDAR at the same time. So that's a lot of technology to swallow when you're considering keeping standards up with the technology. You know, that's a lot.
Right.
That's a lot. And that's why we still see in contracts, you know, it needs to meet the 200 scale or whatever. And we're like, well, scale's different now. I mean, nobody's using a plotted map anymore. So that changes things.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I use the old map scale to kind of find out what they want, like pixel resolution. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know what pixel resolution. And I'm like, okay, let's go back a few years. If I were to put the map on your desk, what scale would that map be?
Yeah.
And let's say 50 scale or 100 scale. And then I'm like, okay, now I know what pixel resolution you need.
Yeah.
That kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
You can make the conversion for them, you know, again, to get them where they want. And just because we can provide higher fidelity, higher resolution data doesn't mean it's what they need. You know, they're used to working with a certain scale of data or a certain type of data, and that their accuracy requirements are for that. So rather than try to push them in the direction of a not necessarily more accuracy, but of again, a higher fidelity solution, they may not want that. So there is a whole world out there that just does CAD, you know?
That's another good point, Greg, because that's something else we try to ascertain when we're talking to, like, I mean, if we're talking about DOT, okay, we know what that standard is and what we got to meet. But if we're talking about an engineer for a development project, for instance, and he may be comparing us against two others, it's sometimes very hard to determine if they say, okay, we want 1 foot contours. Well, now there's 100 different ways to get to 1 foot contours. Mm-hmm. But those could be very different accuracies. So try to, and if you're trying to get the project, you want to make sure that you're proposing apples to apples with the, you know, company B and C, and you don't always know that. So trying to dig in and find out, you say you want 1 foot contours, to what degree of accuracy and how do you even get there? Because we can do, like you said, we can do an automated approach through SimActive and imagery, and generate point cloud. It'd be pretty darn good without really ever touching it manually. But 99% of the time, we'll take a step further and we have our map techs view that point cloud that was generated. And that even goes with the LiDAR as well. I mean, LiDAR is very good, but we don't just trust it. Hey, it's LiDAR. Here's the Rare Earth LIS just from the programs you run. Here you go. We still set up every project we do as long as we know what the standards are. I mean, we're viewing the LiDAR point cloud in a 3D stereo environment, because your LiDAR is going to be, or your autocorrelated surface through imagery. If there's brush out there, dense grass out there, that's where your last points are going to be. Yep. Well, is that the best end product? No, it's not.
Yeah.
And depending on how thick that is, man, there's times you get into a couple feet worth of things. So we think it's important to view it and have our map tech see, oh yeah, there's some dense stuff there. We need to try to push that down as best we can, or if nothing else, outline it and tell the client, hey, this area might not be on the ground. I'd rather be honest with them and say, this area might not be on the actual ground because it's got so much brush or grass or whatever. Unfortunately, I think there's lots of times I go back to the development project against company B and C. They may be just doing the automated approach. You go and here's their cost, where we're taking it the extra step, more man hours, thus more cost, but we lose the project, you know, because it's not apples to apples. So trying to get to that point requires, you know, conversation pretty much every project to make sure we're all doing the same thing. And which of those do you want? I mean, lots of times you'll mention that to a client. You want the automated point cloud where it could be on top of a brush. Is that sufficient? If it is, okay, we'll write that in the scope and we both understand what it is and here you go. But if that's not sufficient, let's talk about it, because there's another level of effort to get there.
Yeah.
And so that's something we're trying to be more cognizant of in every project, not just say, hey, here's the specs, here's the bid or the estimate, hope we get it kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a good point there, in that when you're doing these projects, when you're in the initial phase of putting this together, clearly define what the goal is in that document. Because as you said, for example, you can provide an automated contour from a point cloud, be it LiDAR or imagery. But honestly, the fidelity of it is so tight that you get a lot of holes, you know, what look like holes, little spikes of elevation that, like you say, may come from brush or anything like that. And it honestly, it's not a good looking contour set. And there is an art to this too. And at some point you have to say, is it really important that they even have that? And then, you know, should we strip those out so this whole thing looks better? And, it, you know, that takes time. It's not an automated process. You know, and again, that's extra cost. So when you're comparing yourself to, you know, alternative B, you have to have those things defined. So, and defining that again goes towards accuracy. So, a good point there. Right. So very good point.
Right. Yeah. Cause one more thing along that line, Eric, is, you know, if you've got the point cloud, but then you've got a culvert or a drain or any kind of hard break, we, even though we have all those points, we'll still go generate a break line.
Yep.
And so we're still drawing a decent amount of break lines in projects so that when you do create the tin or generate contours, you can actually see exactly where the break is, where it slopes off, what have you. Mm-hmm. And versus, like I said, if you generate them from the point cloud only, a lot of time because they're so dense, it's like, it's not pretty.
Yeah.
So how useful is that?
Yep. And, you know, to that point, I want to comment this on Correlator 3D. I mean, Correlator 3D will create a surface, will create an ortho, all of that for you. That's great. And you can draw contours from that. And then you can go out and edit those in other software. Or there's other software where you can bring in the surface and the mosaic and you can draw your break lines. And even farther back, you can just say, I'll take the AT solution into a stereo environment like Daddy M, you guys use, and actually set up stereo models. So there's more than one way to skin a cat here. There's more than one way to get to that solution. And how you as an organization are comfortable with those ways weighs in on what, how you define accuracy and what your costs are to those customers. So there's no one way to do it right, but the way you're doing it has to be defined and it has to meet that level of accuracy. So
right. Well, and in that regard, Eric, we, be it a project with a fixed wing aircraft and a large format camera and big sensor, or the helicopter with medium format and a LiDAR sensor, or a UAV, we tell our clients, we're going to pick the one most cost effective for your project. Mm-hmm. And we're going to guarantee you that the accuracy at the end of the day that we hand you is going to be the same regardless of which platform we use. Well, with the UAV, that's a little more difficult because, you know, the cameras aren't quite as good as the higher end camera. The LiDAR sensors, you know, tend to be, you could say, low end, but lower end, because you're not going to put a $500,000 LiDAR sensor on a UAV. Yeah. People may, I'm not comfortable with that yet.
Yeah.
So you've got a plug for some active, if you will. I'm not getting paid for this, but we looked several years when we first got into UAVs, we were looking at the different softwares out there. Most of them are just the all automated approach and that's it, which you can do with Synactive as well. But the reason we went with Synactive is because we are able to go through the same format we do with a UAV that we do with the medium format, the large format. We still are doing the AT. We're still checking the AT the way we normally do. We're still going to a stereo environment to verify that everything's good, be it the automated point cloud or whatever. And we were getting, we did tests, we did some test projects with your software and a few of the others, couple of the others that are pretty popular out there now. And we were getting going back to my mantra of, we're going to give you the same accuracy regardless of the platform. Synactive is the only one that we tried that was getting us there consistently.
Yeah.
The others, when we ran, they may be good where the actual control points are, but then you start checking in between there. It was up, down. It wasn't giving us that consistent accuracy. So like I said, Synactive was the only way to go.
Yeah. Well, to that point, a couple of points there. One, you're right. The cameras that are in UAVs are not calibrated mapping cameras by any standard. But Correlator 3D can do the calibration for you. So, if you consider that and you include that in how you report to your customer, then it's still a viable option. It still works fine. It's just that in the
Right.
days of calibrated mapping cameras, you may be able to go, you know, 2-3 years without having to recalibrate, and your solution is still good. Whereas with a camera
Yeah.
and a drone, you're probably going to want to calibrate it way more often than that. You know, just to be confident in the solution, and you can do that. And the reason for that is, again, they're not
Yeah.
metric. They're not self-contained and can handle, you know, air pressure changes and things like that. So, you know, there is flex in that solution, which causes the problem.
And I don't know how much that message is getting out there. In fact, I don't think it is getting out there of how important that is.
Yeah.
To have that calibration to help you with your accuracies.
Yeah. Well, my second point to that was you need to know a little bit more about mapping to understand that what's being reported, whether it's in our AT report or whether it's in another's, to check, to actually independently go and look at, you know, maybe check shots on the tin or the surface that you've created, just to again validate that nothing's moved around and so forth. So that's
right.
You know, again, it goes to,
well, check shots are critical regardless. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it definitely goes to that. So, you know, you talked about it in Correlator 3D. We have various tools in our processing workflow to validate. So, you know, again, how are map products validated against a standard? So you've got a standard. We produce a report as part of our AT solution, and it tells you, you know, here the control is, you know, GCPs are XY off, Z off. You can see in that report, honestly, the best part about those reports, whether it's ours or someone else's, it tells you whether or not you've got a good solution or you've got a problem. And you can hunt down that problem. Do not proceed. Don't pass
yeah.
go. If you see a problem there,
yeah.
Well, one, does it meet the accuracy requirement, and is it suitable? And two, if there's a problem, you can chase it down by withholding control points, adding other control points, and then you may determine that your problem is not in the AT solution. It may be in the survey. Which again,
yeah.
Don't pass go. Go back to the surveyor, ask them to yeah. validate their points. If they agree that's a bad point, you can throw it out and you can keep going. You know,
right. And that's one thing I like too about the part of the reports, because what I typically look at if we've done the AT through correlator is just it's the graphic. It's where the green, yellow, or red mm-hmm. points. You know that that's a quick, easy thing for me, just trying to oversee things, is our solution good? Mm-hmm. And I love that about it, because you get, oh, there's a couple red points. We need to dig in. We do, like you say, check with the surveyor, or if we have LIDAR, hey, you'll pull out a LIDAR point, see if that helps. Mm-hmm. But you can't pass go until every one of those dots on that screen are green.
Yeah.
And I really like that. You don't have to be a photogrammetrist to see that they're all green, or whether you got some yellow or red intermixed that have to be fixed.
Uh-huh. And there's two things to that. I mean, one, we show you in the bundle adjustment, or not in the bundle, just in the tie points, whether or not the images are lined up or in the right location and things like that. You know, and like you said, a color mm-hmm. ramp, green, yellow, and red, based off how many pixels off they are. If you see red ones, there may be an issue with the reported position of that image, you know, anything like that. It may not be necessary. You may be able to say, okay, let's filter out the red ones. We don't need them because we've got enough overlap. So let's take this
yeah.
potential problem out. And then, you know, again, you've got a report on the control. Again, you could look at it, and it's got some color coordination to it. So that's great. But you also, in Correlator 3D, if you go into your AT folder, you've got all the raw data as well. So you can look at the mm-hmm. raw data of, you know, your control points and say, there were 8 images that covered that control point, and of those, there were 600 tie points
yeah.
that went across that. that image. And therefore, it's probably weighted pretty strong versus, you know, there's one on the fringe where there's only three images that cover it and it looks like it might be a little off. That may be why it's off. And going back to being a photogrammetrist, we can look at that and see, okay, you know, you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Maybe there's just a quick fix here that you can analyze the solution and
usually there is, not always, but usually there is. You just have to dig a little bit to find it sometimes.
True. So, you know, again, you have an accuracy report that we produce. If you're using other software, you have an accuracy report that they produce. So, you know, that again is a baseline, tells you that you're probably, your AT is good. You're hitting the ground like you should. Next, you're creating a deliverable from that, whether you went from orientations into DADEM, stereo extraction, break lines. From those break lines, you create a surface. And then you're going to meet ASPRS standards or whoever standard you are, you're probably going to put that into some type of spreadsheet and run the calculations to determine, did I meet that accuracy criteria? On your guys' end, how do you in the end to your customer show that you meet, you know, that accuracy standard?
Yeah, well, we have checks all through the process. Like even when we get the AT report, for instance, and everything looks good, we'll then go have one of our map techs set it up, and they will, using that AT setup, they'll go read the control points. What are they reading that XYZ at? And does that XYZ match the control point, or did perhaps the program do a little bit too much adjustment?
Yeah.
From there, we'll run the LIDAR against the finished bare earth. We'll run it against the ground control, provide that report. We'll run it against the check shots, run that report. Then once we get to, say, the finished 3D DTM file, we'll make a 10, and we'll run that against all those points. Because that's really what we're providing the client, you know, the 10 is what they're going to be using. And so we want to show them, hey, here's your control points, here's your check shots based on that 10. So you can feel comfortable in it based upon that. But like I said, it takes the previous checks through the process before we get there to make sure that everything we're doing is flowing through to where we can provide that end report and product to them, that it is truly meeting the standards that they want and that we said we were going to give them.
Yeah. You know, Bill, I think we've covered everything and rambled on a little bit. I always appreciate it when we've got other photogrammetrists or people that are, you know, deeply knowledgeable about the subject of mapping. You know, we're going forward with mapping with new technology, LIDAR, you know, how we report accuracy to the point of, you know, adding metadata to things, you know, in our solution to our customer. But it's all just to make sure we meet the requirements they're looking for, so that when they, like you say, when they start moving dirt, or, you know, when they start counting lumber or whatever, they're getting accurate counts, they're getting in, and they're doing things efficiently. So, well, Bill, thank you very much. Again, we appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks so much, Eric.
Well, I'd like to thank my guest, Bill Johnson with DAS Geospatial. Thank you. I'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us as well. This podcast was created in conjunction with a webinar. You can access that webinar as well as previous webinars and podcasts by going to our website, simactive.com, where they can be found under the Learning tab. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast through many of the popular podcast subscription sites. Once again, thanks for joining us. Until next time.